Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. Spirit of Nigeria, Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed, giving you positive Nigerian energy, positive Nigerian vibes, positive Nigerian narratives, the authentic source of Nigerian information. Time now for Doctor's Run with Dr. A.G. Akme.
Welcome to Doctor's Round on Spirit of Nigeria Radio. My name is A.G. Ahmed. It is that time again for Doctor's Round. This is a program in collaboration with Turn Nigeria, Transforming, Uplifting, Reforming Nigeria. This is a program that is focused on your health. We're your partners in good health. We want you to be the best that you can be health-wise. As usual, we have a guest speaker in the house who will be answering your questions on a very important area of medicine. We're going to start by having a case that will be presented as usual by LJ Daddy. Following that, we have a series of questions for our specialist, and thereafter, you will have the opportunity to ask him question. Remember, you can always get hold of us on our number in Nigeria, 0705-320-1010. That's 0705-320-1010. We're going to be talking, and we're also transmitting on live radio in Oyo State. Welcome again to Doctor's Round. And as usual, I'm your host. The area of medicine we'll be talking about is an area that is probably has the least amount of specialists in the whole of Africa. I was discussing with the guest speaker earlier on today, and it made me to understand that there are only 100 of his kind to 200 million population. There's one neurosurgeon to 2 million Nigerians. That's it. Looking at the number of road traffic accidents, looking at the number of head injuries, spinal cord injury, that is a serious matter. In this regard, we will listen to our guest speaker, who will be telling us what problems are more common and how to best access these limited resources. Without further ado, our guest today is Dr. Biodun Ogungwu. He is a trained neurosurgeon, a registrant of Nigerian Medical and Dental Council. He's a registrant of other colleges. He's a neurosurgeon with higher degree in neurosurgery. So this is not just by practice. The practice is there, but he has a higher qualification from United Kingdom. He has extensive surgical repertoire, elective surgical procedures. He has a very strong clinical research base. And while I was talking, when I checked, there was, as of 2011, this guy has over 100 published articles. That was 2011. He has done extensive work as a pride of Nigeria. He has also impacted knowledge and is actively involved in creating awareness among patients and their families, training medical students. He is an advocate for good health. So this is his home, Doctor's Round. Dr. Wu, welcome to Doctor's Round.
Thank you so much. Thanks for that wonderful introduction. I'm all right. Thank you. I'm good. Thanks a lot.
No, I seldom ask our guest speakers how they are, but I know I still have PTSD from my days in medical school for neurosurgical procedures. You guys operate for 11 hours, 15 hours non-stop. Man, where did you get such energy?
I have been operating since 8 o'clock this morning.
Wow.
Granted, we did two cases, so there was a break in between, but you know, the whole team, we've been at it today on Sunday, you know, from 8 o'clock in the morning, but we had no choice. You know, when these things come, you just gotta go.
As a neuroscientist, I've always fascinated myself. I would like to have EEG been playing with neurosurgeons so that I could see their brain waves, hold those for a long period, and an MRI, what's going on.
We would like that as well. We want to know what's going on.
I know. Well, yeah. Welcome. Yes, what is it that I know that you play an active role in BASS, BASS, Brain and Spinal Surgery Consortium. What is BASS?
Thank you. BASS is our new baby, and we started BASS just 2 years ago. But before BASS, when I returned to Nigeria, I was actually working at the National Hospital. Unfortunately, I had to leave the National Hospital after about 7 months, you know, of work in the public sector. But before I left, we did a huge number of operations, especially on spinal cord injured patients. And I went to an orthopedic conference in Kano to present the results of these spinal cord injured patients that were managed with surgery in the National Hospital. And one of the orthopedic surgeons there stood up and said, this is not true, that spine surgery is not being done in Nigeria, that all the cases that are presented, you know, must be stuff that are gotten from the internet. So, luckily, another orthopedic surgeon was in the audience who had referred the patient and we sent the patient back to his facility for rehabilitation. So, on that day, that was my saving grace, you know, that this guy stood up and said, no, this is not true, that he is actually, you know, seeing one of the cases that were operated on at the National Hospital. So, even as far back as 2010, There were orthopedic surgeons in Nigeria who felt that spine surgery was not possible in Nigeria. Yeah?
Yeah.
So, because of that, I started a private hospital that was actually named Spine Fixed in Abuja.
Right.
And that was part of the advocacy to say that, listen, spine surgery can be done safely, done effectively in Nigeria. So that we ran that for about 5 years, and then started Brain and Spine Surgery, you know, consortium of Brain and Spine Surgery Limited, just to continue that advocacy that brain and spine surgery can be done and be done with good outcomes in Nigeria.
Excellent. So this is that's the genesis.
Yes, certainly.
You're still listening to Spirit of Nigerian Radio. I believe we're having some technical problem, but as usual, we're recording this and it will be available on our website. This is Doctor's Round, and we're talking about neurosurgery. Now, Dr. Ogungo.
Yes.
When I hear about neurosurgery, I see a picture of the cranium being taken off, and you're looking into the brain and so on, or you're slicing, you know, you're splitting the spinal cord and so on. What is neurosurgery? And what do you do as a neurosurgeon?
I think we should go back to neurosurgery and neurology, you know, and neurosciences. Anyway, anything to do with the brain, the spinal cord, the nerves, the muscles, you know, that's, you know, everything to do with, you know, nerves. So we, as neurosurgeons, I say to my patients that we use the knife. We are surgeons, but we're surgeons that operate on the brain, on the spinal cord, or on nerves. This is separate from neurologists. Neurologists, I call them the thinking doctors, because they also treat patients with brain or spinal cord problems, but they use medicine. They use other modalities to do the treatment, whereas we are primarily focused on, you know, opening up, going there to see what's going on and sorting it out, whatever it is. You know, so we operate. So we are the, you know, action heroes. Meanwhile, the neurologists are the thinking doctors, you know, but we work together and there's that synergy and collaboration.
So essentially, your area of practice is, yes, the brain and the spinal cord.
Absolutely. And nerves as well, yes.
And nerves. Okay. What is your patient population? Who do you see?
At the moment, because I work privately, I see only those who can afford my care. So in a way, I have already put myself in a straitjacket by using, you know, the finance of the patient to limit access to myself. And that is terrible because I'd love to actually treat a lot more patients than I see. But because I work privately and I provide, you know, that, you know, kind of service, you know, my patient population is limited to those who can only, you know, afford the care. When time permits, you know, I might, you know, visit the public hospital and work with one of the neurosurgeons there to provide a particular, you know, service if they require my expertise. But those that I see are actually those who are, would you say, maybe in the middle and upper class? Because if you can't afford the, you know, the service that I provide, then unfortunately I won't be able to, you won't have access to me.
How do you pose that with your advocacy? When you went to Kano, you just told us the story of how you went to Kano and you then went into practice to carry on the advocacy job. How do you just oppose the reach and, you know, the class thing? Can you help me understand that?
I totally get that. But you see, when I left the UK after my training, mm-hmm, and returned to Nigeria, my main purpose or focus was to work in the public sector. Mm-hmm. I actually wanted to work at the Lagos University Teaching Hospital in Lagos, which was where, you know, I trained, but that didn't work out. So I then, you know, offered my services to the National Hospital in Abuja, and I was employed at the National Hospital. But to be honest with you, the problems were just way too much. And, you know, when I go on ward rounds and, you know, they look at me, they're like, you know, oh, you'll soon get tired. You know what I mean? He's, you know, he's doing all this shakara. He thinks he's the only one who knows whatever. And, you know, we've been doing neurosurgery before he came. So how come? But the thing is, if you want to be innovative, if you want to make changes, you can't keep saying, this is how we've always done it. That's not the way these things work. If I'm coming in to bring new experiences, you know, new ways of doing things, and there was no reception, you know, there was so much obstacle in the way that I just thought, I can't keep banging my head against the wall. And so I had to leave the National Hospital. But sadly, and I can tell you quite honestly, the National Hospital is worse now than 10 years ago in the provision of neurosurgical services.
I understand, and I can feel your challenges, and we'll be talking about those challenges. But we do have somebody here in the house.
Right.
LJ Daddy, we'll be presenting with a case, and I hope you can help LJ Daddy, and by that, help other Nigerians.
LJ Daddy. Best. Go.
Doctor, please help me. Please help me, sir. My name is LJ Daddy. Nurse told me to tell you what happened. Lukuman, we call him Luku. Luku is my shadow friend. He was driving on the expressway, coming home from party, and he called me. Next thing I just hear, bam, and Luku shout. My heart nearly caught. I was just shouting, Luku, are you okay? Luku, are you okay? Luku said, LJ, I'm okay, but the car is right off. I said, Luku, any broken bone? He said, no, that I'm even walking, now I'm okay. Later that day, the next day, his wife, Chrissy, called me, said, Luku is unconscious. I said, Luku unconscious, but he didn't break bone, he was walking. Then we take him to hospital, to emergency. In the hospital, they do surgery to his head. And Luku, they say the surgery was good. I visit him the next day. Luku did not even recognize me. I said, Luku, man, it is me. It is LJ, your friend. He said, sorry, I don't know you. Ha. Again, my heart is cutting. After this, the whole body, I talk to him. His body begin to shake. It is shaking up and down, up and down. His eye roll. He's biting his teeth. I shout, Luku. Then I'm shouting, doctor, let someone help me. Please help me. That is the story. Please, doctor, please help me. Please. We are very worried. Will Luku be okay? Doctor, will Luku be okay? Someone says confusion. Another person says concussion. Another person I'm asking, they say convulsion. Everything, something shown. Doctor, please help Luku. This is LJ Daddy. Thank you, doctor. Thank you, sir.
So, there you have it, LJ Daddy.
Wow.
His friend and the accident.
Yes.
What's going on, Doc?
Yes. Thank you very much. Let me start from the beginning. It sounds like Lukman was driving and using his phone at the same time, which is a big problem. You're not supposed to drive or use your phone while driving. So, maybe that led to the accident. So he's had a significant accident, which in this situation is not fatal because, you know, he's still alive. He was able to walk away from the accident and he's gone to a hospital. Well, he's gone home. And then subsequently he went unconscious. That means that even though he walked away from the accident, he had actually suffered a significant injury. Let me go back to one simple point. If ever there's an accident and somebody died in that vehicle, even though all the other people may have walked away, the fact is that because somebody died, it means all of them were subjected to the same forces that could have killed all of them. So even though they walked away from the accident, they are all still in critical condition. You know, if somebody dies in a vehicle, all the other people should be admitted straight to hospital because they are all at death's door. They've been subjected to the same forces that killed that singular person.
Good point.
That is very important. So even though Lukman walked away from what was a near fatal accident, he has been subjected to significant forces or injury that may not be immediately apparent. And it seems to me, because he said that they actually operated on his head, he may have had a slow bleed, a head injury, which was bleeding slowly, slowly, slowly until he became unconscious. In neurosurgical terms, we call that an extradural hematoma. But all we're talking about now is that Lukman, although he survived the immediate accident, he actually had a significant head injury. So the point is, he survived that, he's had an operation, and from what he says, he's had a successful operation. So one hopes that the blood clot has been removed away from the brain. But part of the sequelae of head injury is irritation of the brain. Irritation of the brain can then lead to convulsion, which is the shaking that he's talking about. Let me drop in another important point here. Anybody who is convulsing, convulsion oftentimes will stop by itself. Itself terminating in like 95% of the cases. So most times you can just watch the person, all this rushing around, looking for cow's urine, looking to put a spoon in the mouth, looking to do so many horrible things that people still do to patients who are convulsing is totally unnecessary. If the convulsion is any more than 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, then take them to a hospital. Don't go to church. Don't go to the herbalist. Please take them to a hospital because we can terminate the convulsion immediately. We have drugs that can stop this, you know, without any questions. So since Lukman is in the hospital, I don't have any worries at all that doctors and nurses can terminate the seizure and then they can repeat the brain scan and find out exactly why he is convulsing. But this can be easily managed. So I think the outcome should be good for Lukman. I think he should be all right. And the seizures can be managed properly.
Thank you very much. You explained the confusion.
Yeah.
You explained the convulsion. What about this concussion that LJ Daddy was talking about?
Well, it doesn't have a concussion. Concussion, you know, is a very simple term. What Lukman has, which would have necessitated someone operating on his head, is a proper brain injury. You know, that's a proper brain injury. And if, because he's had, see, there are times when footballers have a head injury. You know, the reason why they removed them, even though they think, you know, I can still play, coach, I can still play, is if they've had a significant head injury, they can have a slow bleed. And that can lead to death if it is not identified. So even though footballers have a head injury and they say, doctor, I'm okay, coach, I can still play, we don't allow them to continue to play until they have gone to have a brain scan. Because that head injury could be a slow bleed. And sometimes they have just, you know, gone home and they're found dead in the morning. So Lukman actually did very well, you know, getting to a hospital on time because he could have just been found, you know, dead in the morning.
Interesting. So the takeaway home here is that if there's an accident and somebody died, ensure you get to the hospital.
Just go to the hospital and be admitted. There's no question of going home. If somebody died in a vehicle, it means that everybody in that vehicle was subjected to the same forces that killed one person. They are all at risk.
Thank you very much, Doctor. You're listening to Doctor's Round on Spirit of Nigeria Radio and our sister radio in Ibadan, Live Radio. And we're talking to Dr. Ogungbo. He's talking to us about neurosurgery in Africa, in Nigeria. And he's talked about this particular case, which he has looked at very well with the little information available to him. You train in United Kingdom, right? And you return home to practice.
Yes.
What's wrong with you? What was wrong with you? Why did you go back home?
I know. Long story, but in truth, I actually never wanted to leave Nigeria. I always, always wanted to stay in Nigeria and practice medicine. Mm-hmm. When most of my friends were leaving, for many years, I resisted. I actually even was working in private practice. But I'm the kind of person that I know what my capabilities are, and I, you know, I'm not shy in recognizing when I've reached my limits. So when I was working in private practice in Lagos so many years ago, I knew I could be better than I was. And so at some point I thought, you know, I needed to travel out and go and specialize. But when I actually left Nigeria, I was going to become a trauma surgeon. That was, you know, what I really fancied. I wanted to be a traumatologist. So I went to the UK, I started training, you know, in orthopedics, fixing broken bones and, you know, replacing hips and knees. And that for me at that time was my life. I was going to be an orthopedic surgeon and then return to Nigeria and work in a trauma center, just managing, you know, head injuries, you know, bone fractures, whatever. That was my, you know, my major interest. Unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, I went to Oxford, Radcliffe Hospital in Oxford, to do a 2-week locum in neurosurgery. And in that 2 weeks, they made neurosurgery. You know, you were talking about how neurosurgery is almost like an elitist, you know, specialty, and where very few people. They made it so difficult and, you know, obtuse. You didn't really understand what was going on. Yeah. No, when I went to Oxford, it was as if any monkey can do neurosurgery. They made it so simple. 1 + 1 = 2. So long as you do the right things, you will get the good outcome that you want. And I thought, I don't want to be an orthopedic surgeon anymore. I can be a neurosurgeon. And I changed. In 2 weeks, I left orthopedics and decided, come what may, I was going to become a neurosurgeon. And many years later, it's the best decision I've made. You know, I wake up and for me, I tell people, neurosurgery for me is like playing football. You know, Ronaldo, you know, enjoys playing football. That's the way I feel about neurosurgery. I wake up and I'm so excited, you know, to do neurosurgery.
That's very interesting. You went ahead, you changed the course of your career because of your 2-week experience.
Yeah.
I put you on the spot.
Yeah.
Are you impacting such changes? Because we certainly need neurosurgeons in Nigeria. That we have 1 to 2 million.
Yeah.
Men.
Yeah.
Are you impacting? Or?
I am not. I totally am not. I work in private practice with very limited access to trainees. And that, I think, is the albatross that I carry. It's one of the saddest things in my career so far. I wish I had access to be able to train people the way I've been trained, or even just to hold their hands, you know, even just to talk to them and say, you know, I wouldn't do it that way. This is how I would do it. And just give a different perspective. I would like to do that. But our neurosurgical setup, in a way, especially in Abuja, doesn't allow you to do that. There's so much, what will I say, backbiting. There's so much, you know, infighting. There's so much horribleness. And there's so much divide of, you know, oh, we're public. You're private, we're public, we're private. Who cares? For God's sake, there's nobody thinking about the future of neurosurgery as far as, you know, in government circles anyway. They're not really looking at that and thinking, where are the brains? How can we harness all the skills that we have locally to be so that we can get these children to be the best they can be? There's nobody thinking about that. And that is sad.
I think you and I will have a lot of talk, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to have a lot of talk. Because this is the time to actually start thinking about that. We've got to break down the silos.
We have to. We really have
private,
to.
Public, and what if you, we've got to break down the silos.
It's terrible. It's terrible.
Okay. You're still listening to Doctor's Round. And before we go on a break, I wonder if you could tell us what your challenges have been and what your successes have been so far.
Ooh, challenges first. Challenges first. I think the key thing is not being able to give the very, very best or practice at the highest level that I know that, you know, we can practice. I mean, we can deliver such quality care. But it takes a lot. It takes so much more synergy with government and, you know, public, private sector, all of this working together, to know that this is a common effort to deliver, you know, this particular. Let me give you an example. A friend of mine, we trained together in Newcastle, and he returned back to Thailand, you know, to practice. The government of Thailand actually said, you know, Watana, here's about £3 million. Buy whatever you want, equipment-wise. So this guy has £3 million to spend to buy equipment. Now, guess what? All the equipment he bought is for the people of Thailand. But the skill that he displays, the fantastic equipment he has, means that people in Cambodia and other surrounding countries now do medical tourism to his facility. So the government is making this money, this $3 million investment, the government makes it back, you know, so many times over. Just by investing that little amount of money, by, you know, equipping this gentleman, so they recognize the skill. We don't have that here. When I came to Nigeria, I actually went to Professor Lovett Lawson, and I said to Professor Lovett Lawson, who, you know, God bless him, he died with COVID. But I said to Professor Lovett Lawson, because he runs Zankli Hospital, I said, I want to come and work in your hospital, but you don't have to pay me. I will pay you. I will come and work in your hospital as a neurosurgeon, and I will pay you, because neurosurgery makes money. Neurosurgery, so long as you do the right thing, you do it well, it's a service that is much required, and it's a high-end service. So I said to Professor Lawson, I will pay him for me working in his hospital. We never did, you know, get to work together, but hey, neurosurgery, you know, can earn the Nigerian government huge amounts of revenue from medical tourism from West Africa, if not, you know, from outside Africa.
We'll be taking a short break, and when we come back, we will be talking about the common neurosurgical problems in Nigeria and carry on our discussion. This is Doctor's Round on Spirit of Nigerian Radio and Life Radio.
Everybody know they bad for them. Zombie know they zanku. They know the great body, oh, great body, oh, great body. They know the great body, oh, great body, oh, great body. Supposed to be dangody, oh, dangody, oh, dangody. So you know be chukudi, oh, chukudi, oh, chukudi. Kilo de, kilo de. Why you cry, oh, mama? You won't commit suicide when you supposed to dance my kosa. I hate them, yo. What goes up on stage? No kill yourself, yo. No kill yourself, yo. To go dance my kosa. Sululele. Eh, sululele. Eh, sususu. Sululele. Eh, sululele. Eh, sususu. Oju elepa. Oju elepa. Oju elepa. Oju elepa. Oju elepa. Everybody know they bad. Zombie know they zanku. They know the great body, oh, great body, oh, great body. They know the great body, oh, great body, oh, great body. You supposed to be tangody, oh, tangody, oh, tangody. So you know be chukudi, oh, chukudi, oh. Mama ileke, mama ileke, mama kolebe.
Doctor's Round. You're still listening to Dr. Ogunwo. Our guest episode, Dr. Ogunwo is a surgeon in Abuja, and he has been talking to us about neurosurgery and the sort of stage in Nigeria. Before we went on break, Dr. Ogungwu, you talk about the areas of the body you concentrate on. The two main area, the brain and the spinal cord, and you said the nerves. Let's talk about the conditions that affect the brain, like brain tumors. What are the common brain tumors in Nigeria?
When you say common, that in his way presupposes that we have data. We don't have good data to be able to say this is the commonest tumor that we see. Every hospital, every unit have their own, you know, different. For my own particular practice, you know, in private practice, I see a lot more of what we call benign brain tumors. Benign means, you know, it's not going to spread outside of the brain, and, you know, so long as you're able to remove all of it, you might, you know, be able to give the patient a permanent cure. Benign as in different from malignant. Malignant means it's fast growing, it's horrible. I mean, in all honesty, no matter what you do, that tumor is going to kill the person. You know, so we see what we call meningiomas. Meningiomas are, you know, tumors that come from the wrapping around the brain called the meninges. You know, so the tumors develop from the meninges. They're not actually from inside the brain itself. They're just oftentimes on the surface of the brain. So in a way, quite easy for us neurosurgeons to get to them and to remove them safely. We also have pituitary tumors. The one I was operating on today is a gentleman in about 69-year-old with a pituitary tumor. A pituitary tumor is right in the middle of the brain and it causes blindness. Now, he was actually, you know, just only able to see.
We're having some technical problems. Light. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
When he came to see me, you know, that, you know, nobody batted an eye. But part of the thing with him, which was also interesting, was that the tumor came to light eventually because it started giving him severe headaches. But guess what? He went to a hospital and he was treated for malaria. You know, it was like this severe headache is being caused by malaria. So before the penny dropped, when they then noticed that, you know, he actually couldn't see, which led to a brain scan, which led, you know, to him, you know, coming to me. We've operated on him and thank God his vision is improving. So now he's able to recognize people, he's able to see colors. But people like this end up, you know, with huge, humongous. When you ask me about the challenges we have and, you know, the reason for advocacy, this is why we have to keep talking, you know, and informing and educating people, you know, don't hide the symptoms, don't go to pastors, don't go to the herbalist, you know, go to a hospital. But even when you go to a hospital, you have to pray that you see a doctor who doesn't think everything is malaria. You know, I say to people that if malaria was a family, they would have left Nigeria long ago because they've been maligned, you know, so often, you know, that they would have just quit. They're not guilty of so many of the things that people accuse them of, you know. Everybody calls everything malaria, but it could be a brain tumor causing severe headaches, causing, you know, deafness, causing, you know, blindness, causing weakness of an arm or a leg. When you have a severe headache and you have this, I call it jara, that you've got a little bit of jara, you've got some blindness, you've got some deafness, you know, you can't move or you have seizures, then that is not malaria. You must get that checked out properly by a thinking doctor. You know, doctors have to think.
Sorry, doctor. One of our philosophy on Doctor's Round is to empower the patient to be the best that they can be, to advocate for themselves.
Yes.
We pride ourselves on this radio station in giving power to the patient. If I were to ask you to tell me some telltale signs that will enable me as a consumer to say, you know what, doc, I don't believe you're treating malaria, because an educated patient population leads to an educated and more effective medical practice.
100%. I think the first thing is that patients must not mislead doctors. There are so many patients who go to a hospital and say, doctor, I have malaria. I know it's malaria. I've always treated malaria. This thing affects me every month. Well, malaria doesn't affect people every month. Leave the doctor alone. Just tell the doctor your symptoms and let him make the judgment as to what is happening. When you tell the doctor, doctor, you know, I have a sour taste in my mouth, or I have a headache. I know it's my malaria. Just treat me for malaria. Well, a doctor that doesn't want to think further than his nose will give you the medication and just tell you to sort of, excuse my language. But if you just go to a doctor and say, you know, I have a headache, I don't feel well, doc, a good doctor will examine you. We still must continue with the art of touching patients. When you touch people, you actually can feel it. It allows you to have empathy and to look at the person and think, this could be my relative. When you put the patient in that realm to say, this person could be my relative, most doctors will not treat for malaria. They will want to get to the bottom of what is happening to the patient. And that's where the problem is.
It's interesting. We have a subtechnical problem.
Patients should not go to doctors.
We're just losing you there. You were talking about the atypicality of patient, the chronicity of presentation, the fact that you don't want to mislead the doctor. You want to tell him exactly what your problems are, how long the problems have been, what you've tried before, and what collaborated with the doctor.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, don't tell him the diagnosis. Let him make the diagnosis. Oftentimes, some patients confuse doctors. You know, there are times when I have to say, listen, just tell me what you're feeling. Don't tell me what the diagnosis is. I don't want to know that. I want to make my own decision to be able to be in the best position to help you. That, I think, is one important thing. The other thing, of course, is that, you know, doctors must go through the complete sequence of listening to the patient, examining the patient, and then investigating. When we miss out any of those steps, you get it wrong.
Thank you very much. So you've talked about the meningiomas, you've talked about
pituitary tumors,
you've talked about the atypical signs that should alert us to ask more questions.
Yeah.
Are there other things you want to say about brain tumor? Just for the layperson, for me.
But the key thing for us is that we would like patients to present early. And so they must come to a hospital early. They must be seen by a neurosurgeon early. When the tumors are small, when they're, you know, easy to operate on, we get the best outcome. When they're so huge, you know, the cost of care goes up, the risks goes up, and the risk of death is astronomical. Yeah. So no one should hide the symptoms. And I keep saying, and I'd love to keep repeating this, don't go to a herbalist, don't go to the pastor, you must present to a hospital. And if you're not happy, get a second opinion.
You bet. And we're going to talk about second opinion. And you touched on something very important. The fact that you're having seizure,
yes.
The fact that you're going blind is not just because you've received a promotion. It's not just because people in the villages are after you. It is because your brain is in trouble.
Absolutely.
That's tell your doctor. If your doctor doesn't do what he's supposed to do, you're paying.
Yes.
If the government is paying, you're paying for it, and you have a right to ask questions. Let's go to other areas. The other part of the body that you spend most of your life on has to do with the spine.
Yes. Yes.
First, can you tell us about spinal cord injury?
Well, spinal cord injuries occur oftentimes because of road traffic accidents, same as, you know, head injuries occur, road traffic accidents. And that can lead to a broken bone, a broken spine, or actual damage to the spinal cord, which is inside the bone. Mm-hmm. So there are two problems. The bone can be broken, causing a lot of pain. The spinal cord itself can be injured, which is what causes the paralysis. So people are unable to move their hands or move their legs, and they be so bad that this becomes a permanent injury. The thing is that we cannot make new brain. We also cannot make new spinal cord. We can't make new nerves. Yes, nerves grow, but they grow at such a slow rate, you know, you'll be waiting till kingdom come before they join up together. So because we don't and we can't give somebody a new brain or give them a new spinal cord, it means we have to protect what we have. So when patients come to hospital with a spinal cord injury, we're looking to see how much is the spinal cord damaged and how can we very quickly help to restore it, you know, back to health by fixing the bones, by, you know, removing any pressure on the spinal cord, because that gives it the best chance to recover. So oftentimes we're doing a salvaging job, you know, because, you know, if it's totally damaged, then oftentimes it's irreversible injury.
So early intervention is very important.
Early intervention is critical. It's critical.
You're listening to Doctor's Round on Spirit of Nigerian Radio on Live Radio in Ibadan. Our guest is Dr. Ogubo, and he has been talking about those kind of conditions that affect the brain and the spinal cord. The area of his specialization is neurosurgery, and he's talked to us about these very important things that we need to do as consumers of service and how we need to advocate for yourself. It is important. You had indicated that if your doctor is not doing something, your condition is worsening, it appears not responding to treatment, you seek a second opinion. How easy is that? With 100 of you to 200 million of us, how easy is it to get a neurosurgeon?
Yes, it's not easy. And sadly, most of the neurosurgeons are only in the urban centers. So a lot of people in the rural areas have no access to neurosurgery. Thank God, of course, because there's been an accelerated training of more neurosurgeons. Many of these neurosurgeons are now going to the teaching hospitals and, you know, some of these peripheral hospitals. So if we continue at the rates at which the elders in the neurosurgical community are, you know, training new ones, we will be able to deliver 5 years, 10 years time now, a better coverage, you know, for Nigeria. But we are online, we are on social media, and I think for most people, if they have access to social media and you type in neurosurgeon, you will find one of us. And in particular for me, I mean, think about it. Last night, somebody called me at 2 o'clock in the morning. Now, I'm operating at 8 o'clock this morning, but this guy calls me and says, "Listen, doc, I'm sorry to wake you up, but I have an emergency." And I said, "Okay, I'm already awake." So we talk about it. So we are accessible. At least I am accessible. And I know many neurosurgeons are also accessible. So we try to cover in that way by being open and, you know, accessible to patients. If they call, we will certainly pick their call.
I wonder if there's any sense actually in seeking second opinion from a different doctor. If neurosurgeons is a third layer. So I go to any hospital, Yalabake Hospital, James, whatever hospital, and I have my GP taking care of me.
Yes.
But I'm having some difficulties here. Can Nigerians seek second opinion and say, "Hey, this seems not to be responding. Can we get another doctor to look at it?" Is that possible?
I think it is possible. And the thing is that there are different doctors exposed to different experiences. So one GP may not know that there's a neurosurgeon, you know, who can manage this particular condition. But if a second GP has been exposed to neurosurgery a bit or to neurosurgeons, they might have a different opinion or, you know, different way of managing the same case. So I think taking a second opinion or a third opinion or a fourth opinion is always a good idea, you know, especially if you're not happy and the problem is not going away.
So when will an individual who has a neurosurgical condition, when should they be considering seeking second opinion?
Well, there are two important things in neurosurgery. Let's say about spine, for example. pain. Pain is one thing that makes anybody, you can't live with pain. So if your current treatment is not alleviating your pain, then you should seek a second opinion. If somebody is having horrible headaches and nothing has worked for that headache, then seek a second opinion. The second thing, of course, you know, is disability. Weakness of an arm or leg, blindness, deafness, or as we talked about, convulsion. If any of those things are not being ameliorated by your current treatment, then you should seek a second opinion. Those are things that you shouldn't wait. You can't, you know, no one can live with pain. Any pain that is making an adult cry, I take it serious, and they should take it serious. Any pain that is making you wake up and you're thinking, I wish I died last night, or I want to die to get rid of this pain, then no one should live like that. That is the kind of pain you should seek a tenth opinion if necessary.
Fascinating.
Disability, weakness of an arm or leg, very important.
What about, I mean, you know, the cultural relativities of second opinions. What does the culture say? How does a patient overcome this idea that me going to seek opinion? Do you have any advice for our listeners? You know,
I think our patients should not so much worry about what their doctors would think. A lot of people put barriers in the way. A trained medical practitioner, a doctor who is worth his salt, will not allow his ego to stand in the way of the health of his patients. Those who are well trained will not stop you from going to seek a second opinion or worry that you went to seek a second opinion. It doesn't bother me personally at all. You know, so a doctor that is well trained, doctors who are well trained will tell you what medication they've given you. Any doctor that is hiding the name of the medication from his patients is not a trained practitioner.
I like the sound of that.
Hospital where they don't tell you the name of the drugs and they just say, we've only given you four. When you want some more, come back to us. That is not a quality hospital. It is not a hospital that anyone should be proud of. Doctors should tell the patient the name of the drug, how they're taking it, because this has so much huge ramifications. The patients must be fully informed of their care. Any doctor who is hiding information is not a trained practitioner.
So in any transaction, in any medical transaction, you, the patient, are the most important. And asking your doctor
100%
is very important.
100%. I'll tell you one thing else before you say that. Yeah. When patients go to a hospital and they say, listen, we want you to go and do an x-ray. Well, when you pay for the x-ray, it's your property. Yeah? You paid for it. No one should then take it from you and say, you know, it belongs to the hospital. No, it belongs to the patient. So you'll be able to take your x-rays, your blood tests, any of the results, to take it home, take it to any other doctor you want to go and see, any hospital that is taking those things from you, which is your own personal property that you paid for. You should be able to insist and say, no, doc, I paid for that CT scan. I want my CT scan back.
And by extension, your medical record as a patient,
if you want it, you should be able to get your medical records.
In fact, we advocate that it should be a practice that you have
absolutely
a medical record, so yes, that you know what you're doing. When in electronic ages, you
100%.
Can ask a medical record and seek second opinion. By doing yes. this kind of thing, we will get the patients health, we'll get healthcare to improve generally.
100%.
We're almost running now. And I will have to get you back. This is very interesting. I'd like you to...
We're going to have to do this again.
Yeah, but I'd like you to ask to quickly just give one response or so.
Right.
To this idea, talking about the brain. The brain doesn't grow. The neuron doesn't grow. What is the general outcome? What you guys would call prognosis when it comes to neurosurgical conditions? It is frightening. I'm a psychiatrist, and I know how much I respect the brain. What is
you know, when I decided to go and do neurosurgery, one of my friends wondered why. Because as far as we were concerned, training all the patients why would anyone want to go into such a specialty? Well, guess what? It's so different nowadays. We have good results. You know, there's been so much huge investments, and the new crop of neurosurgeons that are, especially in Nigeria now, the new crop of neurosurgeons and the those who are being, you know, also supporting us by, you know, coming from the diaspora and the investments, especially in private practice, means that we are getting, at least in my own practice, and I know in Lagos and so many other centers, 90 to 95% good outcome for those patients who present early and who allow us to do the job properly. You know, we're getting very, very good outcomes, especially with spine surgery. You know, spine surgery, you know, used to be in the doldrums in the past, but nowadays, you know, you can go into a hospital, you won't wake up or come out paralyzed. Or been injured in some way. We're doing great. We're doing so much better now than before. But neurosurgery is expensive. It's not a joke. I mean, I do some of the operations I've done today, you know, maybe cost 4 or 5 million. But abroad, these operations cost 40, 50, 200 million because they have the money to be able to invest so that they can even do better than we're doing. So This requires a lot of investment, but the outcome is good and can be fantastic.
I guess what you're saying here is that early diagnosis counts.
100%.
Seeking second opinion counts.
Very important.
And bearing in mind that in Nigeria, we do have individuals who can perform these surgical procedures,
yeah,
give people better quality of life. And in fact, it's not all neurosurgical procedures that are terminal.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. You've shed a lot of light, Doc, and I would like to get you back on this. You and I can have this banter for a long time. We do this, I guess. Yes. Yours has been a very good session, and the listeners are very grateful to you. I thank you as well, and I would like to thank all the people that make this program possible. Also my very good friend Dejayore Day, who is the co-producer of this program, and of course Toye Arologun, who has done a great deal in passing the message on. This is Doctor's Round. I'll be back with you next week. My name is AG Ahmed. Thank you
so much.
You're welcome.
That was Doctor's Round on Spirit of Nigeria Radio. Coming up next is Afrobeat Sunday Jump at the top of the hour. Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.